Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live from beautiful Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of cultural awareness known formerly as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the bustling and bodacious heart of our verdant pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we, the Brieflies, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our Briefly panel today includes... Currently, and more than ever in demand, is historian, professor, down under aficionado, our guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. How are you doing, Bruce?
Good to be here. I've actually put out a call for additional guardians of the galaxy. I think we're going to need them.
Time is short.
That's right. No kidding. Also, part-time Politico, ferry service advocate, new executive director of Vachon Household, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
Going good.
Yeah?
Beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful day.
Yeah, there's a little bit of sunshine. It's not too hot yet. It's perfect.
Actually, I think it was 39 degrees when we got up this morning.
It was.
Chilly. Mariner, backpacker, rower, and how many more months is this administration going to be around, inquirer? Kevin Jones.
Way too many. We know that already.
But yeah.
It's good to be here and happy to be around the table with so many fine Brown Brieflies and a wonderful guest today.
Great. Our usual control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, fellow treetop flyer, and longest serving Briefly, retired Alaska Airline Captain Truman O'Brien is in Florida at his Army reunion. I'm sure he'll bring back some interesting stories.
You will need to hear from Truman next week for sure. Yeah.
He may need to debrief. he may need to exhale.
Do you think they're going to let him leave Florida? I hope so.
They may escort him out.
Yeah, really. Myself, Craig Bellis, former Assistant Attorney General, Gonzaga University, Constitutional Law Professor, and today's stand-in control board engineer. Today, our small talk guest was a founder of Preserve Our Islands to fight Lone Star and Glacier to preserve Maury from being carried away to make the third runway. Former Chief of Staff of King County Councilman Dow Constantine, when Dow was a councilman before he became the executive, a member of our state's House of Representatives, and finally State Senate Majority Leader Sharon Nelson. How are you doing, Sharon?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here. Before we focus on Sharon's warnings and comments about events coming out of the other Washington, let's start by briefly checking in with the Brieflies and our guests regarding any memorable activities they engaged in over the past week. This is the lighter part of the show. Kevin, what have you been up to this last week?
Oh, well, it's been kind of a crazy busy week with Indivisible Vachon planning and activities. But before I go there, I do want to, you know, what I recall in 2017, Sharon, you went from minority leader to majority leader in the Senate. Is that right?
That's correct.
The year, right? Maka came on. And at Earth Day last year, I put a poster together showing the legislative achievements in the environment and the climate area and the 4 years before 2017 and then the years afterwards. And I'll tell you, night and day difference, right, with a switch being thrown. So the leadership there is just say thank you so much, right, for all of those things that happened and we're living with today in terms of addressing the climate crisis that we have. Other than that recollection, I got on the water today. It was awesome. The wind came up just right about the time we got off the water, so it was perfect timing.
And that's springtime.
That is, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, the sun kind of gets things moving around. So, but the sun was great. The water was fantastic and a great row. We also had pretty busy weekend on Saturday here at the four-way stop in town, Bring Them Home, those members of our society who are disappearing and frustratingly unclear where they might be and how do we get them restored back, into their lives and make sure we have due process to honor all of us. So if you missed that opportunity, and there were 150 who didn't, but May Day, May 1st, Cal Anderson Park, noon, newsletter's coming out tomorrow, so details will be there, or check out our website, indivisiblevashon.org. So hope to see you there. That's what I've been up to.
That's good. That's good. We may talk a little bit later about the value of protesting and demonstrations, because that question comes up quite often. All right. Amy.
Yeah, I had so many highlights last week. I was just thinking, I got to take the water taxi twice, 2 days last week during the sunny, beautiful time. I went over to a housing conference in Seattle, which was very interesting. Of course, there's a lot of talk about the Rent Stabilization Act and the tenant-landlord piece and how that's all going to come down for the affordable housing sector, right? And sort of the landlordiness piece of affordable housing. So that was fantastic to be downtown. And then my favorite thing, once a month, the Teen Wednesday, whatever the Teen Wednesday is, smash burgers at the Eagles. So if you haven't been, anyone can come to the Eagles. You can come for dinner. We can sign you in. Best deal on Vashon, $12 for burgers and tots or fries. So that's one of my favorite things. But I think the highlight of my week, even though my shoulder is still suffering from it, is, I had to move our washer dryer out of the mudroom because, Aaron and the dog are all coming into our 750 square foot cabin. So that necessitates some efficiencies. We've got some closet things coming in. So I had to move it all out, which, easy enough to move out your washer and dryer. Different thing altogether, moving it in and reinstalling it because there is literally no side space. Like they fit in and there's, as it turns out, just enough room for me to squeeze in between them and get that washer back in. But I felt it was really truly home improvement project because I had to go up to Island Lumber at least once. And then I went up to Ace at least once. Right. But I did. I finally got that right size pair of pliers and I got that washing machine.
In one trip?
Hooked back up. I did. Yes.
Holy cow. That's some kind of record.
I know. I did. Well, yeah. After struggling around under there, if you can't see me, I'm making, for the listeners back home, I'm flailing around wildly with
my
arms.
You're gesticulating.
Yes. Trying to imagine me scooting between a washer and dryer. So that was, I just felt like such a champion that morning.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well done. Now, they're going to miss you in Denver, aren't they? You're not going to make all those trips.
I know. I'm going to be here full time, which is good. We'll be back there a lot, but with Aaron coming up full time, it'll be good. Our house is on the market. The sign went up today in Denver. We mourned our 20 years and we looked at some of our before photos, when we got the house and we did a lot of work to it and brought it along. So, as I like to say, we're kind of, you got to let go of the last monkey bar to get to the next one.
That's true.
But, but we're celebrating and grieving.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll be thrilled to have you around even more.
Well, thanks. So.
Bruce.
Kind of a quiet week. Wednesday, went to a talk by Bruce Mercer at VCA, which was just incredible. And if you haven't done it and you get a chance, go see his exhibit. It'll be up through the end of the month. And it's just an amazing collection of an incredibly creative mind at work and an incredible artist. So just an amazing. And the place was packed, as you can imagine. So, and then, of course, Easter Sunday, having, 2 7-year-olds, a 3-year-old and 2 11-year-old grandchildren living in the neighborhood was sort of a wild Easter. But it's always fun being around the grandkids. And then tomorrow, I actually take Vashona, my boat, out of the water over at Gig Harbor to have the bottom painted. So That's once every 4 years or so, you know, you got to haul it out and get the bottom redone. And
that Puget Sound grows stuff right away.
It's amazing what grows in Puget Sound. but you know, you keep it at bay. I mean, it's all, owning a boat is always a battle with the elements, right? That's just the nature of it. But so, you know, a lot of prep work just to get it ready to take over tomorrow morning. Haul out at 8:30 in the morning, so take off from here about 7, get over there.
He'll be able to share with Truman next week. He'll tell you the horror stories of his boat.
Well,
I won't. I'm not going to jump on that. I'll just preview it.
I've heard a few of them. I can imagine. Every boat owner, you know, Kevin included, has lots of stories.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say, last weekend in Gig Harbor, I have this on maintenance to scrape whatever's growing on the bottom of the transducer, which is the thing that measures, you know, the water depth. And I know where the mussel farm moved to. Yeah,
that's right.
And I left it behind in Gig Harbor now. But, yeah, it was definitely tenaciously clinging to the stern of my
boat.
They
do.
Oh, my.
They do.
Oh, boy. Sharon, anything to ease your mind this week?
Well, actually, because it was Easter, I had my 96-and-a-half-year-old mother over. She lives in assisted living in Kent. Brought her over on Friday and took her home yesterday. And it's always a good reminder of the challenges aging populations have. Not that I'm young, but at 96-and-a-half, and she's legally blind, still living in her own apartment in assisted living, you begin to see the gaps that we have. She's very fortunate where she lives, and then I live nearby, relatively. But it's always a good time to reflect and say there are a lot of seniors out there that need help, that are living merely on Social Security. And, of course, Social Security is not a topic right now at all for the current administration. And you see just even in a facility how much need there is. And it's hard to keep people working there. It's a challenge. I couldn't work there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and how many folks who are probably immigrants who are working in those facilities that they rely on day to day. And it was nice to have her on island. She loves our view. She loves coming to Vashon. Mm-hmm. She'd like to live here, but it's not real realistic. But
yeah.
It was fun to have her.
Well, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Nice week or weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've already touched upon a bunch of the stuff that I've done, other people here. Doggone it all. No, I just can't.
Oh, did anyone go to the Rainier Beer movie?
No, I did not. I wanted to.
I did that safety, the KCSO forum. Yeah, I heard it was amazing.
Yeah, at the theater.
Yeah.
Right. No, that's one I can't help you out on. I did go to the demonstration or the protest at the Four Corners. I was out there with my wife, Lynette. We were making good trouble. With our due process signs. I was making reference to Magna Carta, where it's one of the origins of the due process laws back in the medieval days in England. Went to Bruce Mercer's event at VCA, which was, as Bruce said, spectacular. And I'd highly encourage individuals to go by there and look at the marvelous cross-section of the work that Bruce has done over the last 40 years. Really unbelievable. And I got my COVID booster. I think this is my 32nd. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not shy about getting those. Knock on wood, I have not had COVID, nor has my wife, and I attribute it to good genes, good living, and COVID vaccinations, yes.
All a good trio there.
Has anybody here been able to avoid COVID? Kevin, you have.
As far as I know, because sometimes it's like, oh,
yeah.
I had COVID. I had no symptoms, but I don't have symptoms. I don't think I've ever had COVID. I'm pretty on schedule with getting the vaccine updates.
Right.
And I was kind of like, oh, how long has it been?
Let's see.
I have to go back and remember.
Yeah, I asked my doctor about that, and he goes, yeah, no, I would get it. And I go, was it a new vaccine? He goes, no, it's still the same vaccine that they had last fall, but he says it will basically double your immunity again when you, if you, when you get it every 6 months. He said by fall they'll probably have an updated vaccine.
If the vaccine committee ever meets, Craig.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. I know. Yes. That's a good point. That's why I'm getting mine now.
Otherwise, Cuddler Royal and never mind. Oh, yeah.
Well, today is April 22nd, which is a significant date, as are all dates. This is April Showers Day. You wouldn't know it. Beautiful sunshine out there right now. This is School Bus Driver Appreciation Day, and we do appreciate our bus drivers very much. It's a lot of responsibility. And it's National Jelly Bean Day, which are quickly becoming stale from Easter, I think. Not Peeps Day. There's actually a separate Peeps Day. That was about a week ago.
So. Those things never go stale.
No. That's because they're never fresh.
No, sugar is a preservative, right?
That's right. That's right. Today in history, in 1889, the settlers in Oklahoma began claiming 1.9 million acres of land in Indian Territory, the so-called Oklahoma land rush.
Yeah, I taught for 2 years at the University of Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
And their fight song is Boomer Sooner, as you can imagine. So,
yeah.
And they run out the little covered wagon, sort of like.
We have to tell people, what's the difference between a boomer and a sooner, historically. Do you know?
I don't.
Oh, I have a bit of trivia there here for you.
Too soon, but listen, I don't know the boomer.
Little history. The boomers were the individuals who actually lined up in the proper place at the beginning. Right. The Sooners were the ones who snuck into the territory and waited until the opening gunshot, and then they just stuck a flag in the ground.
Right. Yep.
Yes, Kevin.
Well, speaking of Oklahoma, I did have a chance to get together with the software go to lunch every month crowd, and they told the story about, when I left and retired, my program was scheduled to move to Oklahoma City, and they actually built a new building to house all of the 3% of the people of us who were willing to go, right? And I did not know this until just last week, that apparently in the building of the new building and acquiring the property, they didn't purchase the mineral rights. And after the building was partially complete, you bet they discovered oil under the building. And that slowed them down a bit.
Oh, geez.
So,
wow.
So the Boeing company has had just so many challenges. But that's just one that
One more. Well, now we've got people all around the world who aren't buying Boeing planes.
They are delaying the delivery,
That's right. This is also the anniversary of the first Earth Day, which was in 1970, founded by Democratic Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson, perhaps a distant relative of yours, Sharon.
I'd have to research that one.
You're not taking credit one way or the other.
It was a good thing you did.
It was a good thing. Mm-hmm.
That's right. But that they say that was quite a timely event in light of a couple of previous events, one being the Santa Barbara oil spill off the coast there, where the major oil spill, and the River of Fire, the Cuyahoga in Cleveland. Things were so polluted that the river just caught on fire. Quite an event.
And I think a local Earth Day luminary, I believe, Dennis Hayes.
Yes.
Spent time at the Bullitt Center, and I think it's maybe Dennis' office may still be there.
But yeah.
I had a good fortune to meet him some time ago doing some environmental work. So to have a chance to talk to somebody who's had that experience in that kind of history.
Right. 1970. Good Lord, that was a while ago. Were you alive, Amy?
I was not.
That just occurred to me. I didn't ask you that question. And now, one other event, which I think...
Over time, he's just going to pin this down.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to hone in. I think this is the perfect segue, actually, to our discussion with our small talk guest, Sharon Nelson. In 1775, as most people know, a few days ago, on April 18th and 19th, Paul Revere rode from Charlestown to Lexington. Well, he tried to go to Lexington. to warn the rebel leaders, John Hancock and Sam Adams in particular, and other militia leaders, that the British soldiers were marching toward Concord to seize the militia weapons and ammo that they had stored there. Revere didn't get to run all the way on his horse to Concord because he got detained. He didn't get all the way to Lexington because he got detained in Concord, but did make it to Lexington in time, they say, to hear the so-called shot heard around the world. My understanding is that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, that 8 of the 70 Americans that were present died on the Lexington Green, mm-hmm. and on the bridge at the in Concord, 3 Americans died. The Redcoats did not fare as well on their march back to Boston. 73 killed, 174 wounded, and 26 missing. As a result of basically guerrilla warfare along that route. Do I have that kind of close?
Yeah, you do. And it's a classic example of low-tech beats high-tech.
Yeah.
I mean, we learned it in Vietnam, and the British learned it in the American Revolution.
British had the greatest army in the world.
They had all the technology, they had all the weapons, but they were locked into very traditional sort of military tactics.
Right. You know,
standing in line, walking in columns, and the Americans just didn't see it that way.
Yeah.
Same thing we ran into in Vietnam.
Yep. Well, we have to hand it to Paul Revere for being a clarion and warning of the oncoming assault by the British. And today we have former State Senator Sharon Nelson, retired, here to talk to us about some warnings, perhaps, and rightfully so. It is a true pleasure to have you back with us today. Unfortunately, the topic is to address some present dangers to our democracy. I didn't want to, Sharon, ask you to go through all your background again. We've done that. We did that, and most people either know you or know of you. So I'm going to dispense with those questions and spend more time on the merits of your current concerns. And before that, and I don't mean this facetiously, I just want to read something. The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of the Voice of Vashon. As an organization, Voice of Vashon does not take political positions. We do support our show's hosts and their guests in expressing their views as long as they're not obscene or hate-mongering. A First Amendment right to do so. I do that on my music show. I read this on my music show all the time because I never know what's going to come out of my mouth.
I'm glad we've got that straight because otherwise I'd be out the door here.
That's right. That's right.
maybe hauled out the door.
Let me ask you this, Sharon. Just sort of as an overview, some people look at what's happening in this government as business as usual. It's just the same. You know, the two parties, they're fighting. You know, we've got people, you know, they're equally at fault. Is this business as usual, in your opinion, or are we looking at truly an unprecedented existential threat to our way of life?
In my opinion, Craig, we are looking at a huge threat to our way of life and to our democracy. And I was reading an article this morning, and apparently there is a group of lawyers and others who are looking at the current administration and are very concerned that we're moving very rapidly towards an authoritarian regime. And I agree with them. I think we are moving at a very fast pace. It became... As the administration came in, I tried at first to ignore a bit of what was happening. When I retired, I was somewhat tired of politics. But it's become very clear in the last 100 days that 47, as I call him, denials, and he didn't know about Project 2025. And he wasn't interested in the project because it was so unpopular while he was running for office that all of those denials were false. He denies and he lies, and he continues to do so as to his compatriots at the federal level. That document, Project 2025, is being implemented, and it's a real threat to our democracy. He also obviously has a team of very far-right conservatives. I think there were about 140 from his prior administration that worked on that document on preparing for this administration. And what they want, in my opinion, is a new type of government. They want an authoritarian dictatorship, and they want to roll our democracy. And they're working long and hard. They worked very hard on preparing the platform and being ready to roll on day one, even with the executive orders that he signed with his auto pen time and time again. But he also, during that time period when he was running, and I think into the prior administration, he was looking for what sycophants he could actually bring in to his new regime. Those who would declare loyalty to him and only to him. When I was elected and went to the legislature in Olympia, I took an oath to the Constitution. And all of us there took it seriously, whether you were Republican or Democrat. I don't see any of his cabinet members taking an oath of that nature seriously. They have already taken their oath. They took it when he interviewed them, in all likelihood. And the problem is, the Republicans in the Senate were steamrolled, and they didn't stand up. They could have, but instead they put in his cabinet. And in the last administration, and while he was preparing for this one, and his sycophants were, he was also tightening his grip on MAGA and on Republicans who may be not as far right as MAGA. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who you can agree with or disagree with, is more of an independent than many in Congress. And she recently said that she is becoming afraid to speak up. She is losing her voice. This is a powerful federal senator from Alaska, a conservative, and she is afraid to speak up. And she said clearly she is afraid of retribution and revenge. That is the work of a tyrant. It is the work of a dictatorship. I would hope that those in Congress can begin to see, after she spoke up, how dangerous this is and support each other. Because by working together, by finding their voices, it would be critical to this nation. And it's important. But as my husband said, and he's kind of my bellwether, what shook him the most is she was shaking when she said this. She obviously was scared and concerned. And that is where this regime has taken us in 100 days. It's a concern.
Yeah. Kevin.
Well, thank you, of course, for laying out the kind of the big picture of where we are at and sort of some of the forces that got us here. I always go back to Democracy in Chains by Dr. Nancy MacLean. So I haven't mentioned that book for a while on this radio show, but others, I think, should pick it up. I'm curious, though, Sharon, you know, we're seeing others being, you know, impacted by this, you know, the people like Garcia, right, who's in El Salvador right now, no due process. We see, like, other people who are being impacted. And I think historically this is always true, that some groups get picked on first, right? But what other threats are out there, do you think? What do you think that we would be seeing? Not that we're immune from those same challenges on Vashon, but what are the general larger threats that, you know, like the majority of our listening audience might not think are headed their way, but that they should be concerned about based on your understanding and awareness?
Oh, thanks, Kevin. The dictators, as I call them, and I look at this as really Trump, Vance, and Musk, and those who are sitting there and supporting him, definitely have their sights on the press, just as Hitler did. They have already made threats to NPR, PBS, MSNBC, CNN, and they utter those, and that might, for them, seem like it's the norm, but it is not. It is setting a pathway where they only allow, at the Pentagon, the far-right news in, where they ignore court orders that they will include the AP, the Associated Press. And on social media, you see them falling in line. When Zuckerberg was at the inauguration and sitting there very proudly to be with the governor, you knew where Meta and Facebook were going. But it's their choice, but it's also, when you look back at Senator Murkowski, probably out of fear and retribution, and also some rewards that may be coming down the road for them. Besides freedom of the press, and you mentioned this, Kevin, the lawlessness of abducting citizens, whether it's an immigrant, a green card holder who is a graduate student or an undergraduate student or a citizen off the streets by masked men who are put in unmarked cars to go to unspecified locations with no ability to contact an attorney such as Craig, and where their families don't know where they're at, is unprecedented. It may have been used in World War II for the Japanese, but I think even there they were given a little bit more information. And when we say, oh, it's the immigrants. Yeah. Well, there was a 19-year-old in the past week who was going from New Mexico to Arizona to visit. He's a U.S. citizen. He was born here. And he was arrested because he didn't have proper immigration documentation. Well, if you're born here, that might be a little tough to get.
Papers.
And who carries their paper with them except for a driver's license? And your driver's license is not going to say born in 1942 in Ponceford, Minnesota. It's not going to say it. So how do you prove it? His parents had trouble reaching him. So, Kevin, I believe we've reached the Gestapo era. They're not wearing brown. They're wearing other uniforms. They're not showing ID. They're not coming in with a warrant. And no, it's not just immigrants. If you want to feel that they don't have rights, but they do under the Fifth Amendment. It's you and me and my daughter and my son-in-law, who's of color, and is truly trying to cleanse this nation of anyone who is not white, in my opinion. So you take a look also at how quickly they deleted DEI.
Before you do let me just ask you quickly about the immigration issue. And I'm going to play devil's advocate here for just a second. What you hear and what I read almost daily is the response of the administration. And that's what I was elected to do. I was elected to get the murderers and the rapists out of the country, and the courts and the liberals are trying to stop me from performing the thing I've been elected to and that the voters of America have decided to do. What's your response to that argument that he makes?
Any person who is detained or arrested in this country has the right to due process. They have the right to prove if they've done those crimes or not done them. And you have a prosecutor who can bring the case. We have a large contingent of men down in El Salvador. Some of the research that's been done has said 75% of them don't have a criminal record. Yes, they may have come into this country illegally. if you're just going to deport people based on that, then at least, for example, this 19-year-old who went from New Mexico to Arizona, I never saw that as a crime, should have the right to prove whether they did or did not. And what have they done since they got here? Have they been a benefit to our society? But just sweeping them off the streets is not acceptable. And I have members of my family who will say, well, they're immigrants. Yes. And those same members of my family are happy to have gardeners and not ask, how did you come across the border? They're happy to have someone who's a house cleaner. They don't ask, how did you come across the border? And Trump said these would all be criminals. The students they're picking up and revoking their green cards and their visas wrote an opinion piece largely or participated in a peaceful protest. Those are legal under our democracy. And yet they're revoking the visas, they're not telling them, and they're picking them up.
Well, some of them are Fulbright scholars that are here on a State Department invitation to be here.
Well, I'm sure Marco Rubio would be happy to revoke that for them. Mm-hmm. Someone who also helped decimate USAID and used to be a proponent of it. But it is not a democracy when you get hauled away. And I had a question last night that I saw on a program that really haunts me. We know where over, well, several hundred men are. We can see the cruelty. We can see how close it is to a concentration camp, just like in Germany. Where are the women? Where have they been shipped to? There was one article I read that some of them are in Venezuela and they've been taken into the jungle. How are they being treated? Are they just being subjected to torture? We need to stand up for them. It's not acceptable at all.
You know, one, you mentioned the immigrants and to the extent that each of us have some history, right, relative to this country. The Jones name hides the Manalia and the Delaney on my mother's side. You know, Irish and Italians who came here with not a lot of respect, right? And done forced sort of manual labor. The Italian family was here to farm, but they were in coal mines and Black Diamond. So, but the follow-up that I wanted to ask you, and I think I maybe know how you might respond to this, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are. You talked earlier about Germany, 1930s Germany, and New York Times, I didn't read the article today, but they came out and basically said, the prelude to the article is we are very cautious about any references to compare this administration to Germany, to Hitler. But it's like, that's a high bar, but now we think that level has been achieved. And I don't know what the article is because I haven't read it. But this notion of the media who's under attack, keeping that bar high, is that part of the solution or part of the problem? And what should media do in this instance, based on your recommendations, your thoughts?
I think it's always important for the media to have a high bar as far as their reporting. I think they can use their voice on their opinion and editorial pages and blast this administration, but I also believe in many cases they have the same problem with their voice that Senator Murkowski does. Mm-hmm. They look at it, and they're there, and they make a profit. We know that the Washington Post has silenced different people on publishing either opinions or cartoons or different articles because they are afraid of getting in trouble with this administration and potentially probably being taken over. It's a real quagmire. And I saw the headlines on that, Kevin. I haven't read it either. Mm-hmm. But it is time that we all get real about where they want to head, the regime, and that they are very serious. Mm-hmm. And we need to be as serious in resisting because it's important. And I look at the different events that have occurred on April 5th and recently, and they're important.
Yeah. You know, if I can jump in just a second, too, it's... I mean, the Nazi reference is a high bar, but I think we're beyond that bar. But I also think it helps to obscure references to current sort of authoritarian regimes. You know, what's going on in Russia, what's going on in Hungary. And for a lot of younger Americans, the Nazi analogy is sort of like, oh, that's way in the past. Whereas what Putin has done and the oligarchs have done in Russia is exactly what's happening right now. And I think hammering that, as well as hammering references to other kinds of authoritarian regime, is really where we need to be, you know, and the bar has to be lower. It really does, because we are in a crisis.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about rendition and due process, but, you know, also I think, Bruce, with your lens, having this only reference to Germany is a very, you know, Eurocentric, right? And, you know, to me, it's much more, we're looking much more at the authoritarian and the, you know, kind of the regimes in South America, right? And what is happening with these folks that we are deporting, quote unquote, now is, you know, very, very similar to, right? And what happened in Peru, in Argentina, in, you know, Ecuador, in like so many of these places in South America, where this is, you know, just of matter of course, right? And, you know, I look at sort of the gutting of the economy and, you know, where we are economically. And, you know, once the bottom falls out of the economy, then truly, you know, there we are in 1980s Latin America, right? Where you have these authoritarian regimes and, you know, there is no way to come back because, you know, the press doesn't exist, right? Like there's no economic bottom to it. So I guess, you know, and my question kind of circling back around to rendition is, you know, obviously we are to some degree, some of this, not that it is not incredibly serious, is also performative, right? It is meant, the chilling effect is meant, whether it's, you know, on immigration pressures or on keeping folks silenced domestically. And, you know, the question is, so, you know, will the eye continue to be on immigrants, or is immigrants sort of the stage for the next step of, you know, who is rendered an enemy of the state?
Well, I think it started with basically making DEI not welcome in the federal government. So you take a look at LGBTQ, you take a look at women, you take a look at anyone who is not white male and willing to fall into line, and they've already been identified. They've been identified clearly by this regime. And it is not going to be just about immigrants. They are the first step, and they're ones where he found that people were, oh, they're criminals, they're rapists. They came in the first administration, remember when they were marching towards the border and there was this huge, even my mother, who is very bright, very with it, was afraid. She was afraid. And that is part of what they want to do, is to make you afraid to stand up. You're afraid of your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we form our own groups and know that that is not the norm, and that we can resist. It's incredibly important right now. And it's one I hope, I'm seeing it somewhat at the federal level for Democrats. I'd have to say, I think Cory Booker helped break through a ceiling that was sitting there where they really didn't know what next step to take. And Bernie Sanders and AOC are out there in force, as others going into Republican districts. They have to become so uncomfortable as far as the Republicans in Congress that they will act. Mm-hmm. And I think as far as acting, the more people who are on the ground protesting, who are calling, who are showing that this is not acceptable, is going to be very, very important for any path out of this. And, you know, as far as the prison or the concentration camp in El Salvador, apparently he's trying to cut deals now where he will trade prisoners to get his prisoners out of Venezuela. Mm. Well, does this mean that U.S. citizens are being traded with another dictator? And I have to say, when the current regime says, well, they can't bring someone back, you're paying $6.3 million to a poor country. Make a phone call, you'll get them back. But this also, for me, goes to the courts. And I am furious with our judicial system. We are too slow. We are too antiquated. And we're not ready at all. And we know the Supreme Court is a problem, but that sometimes they show a glimmer of light. But even to set a hearing 2 weeks out on some of these, you know, the gentleman from Maryland is in El Salvador. The next 2 weeks, they could do anything to him. Get a grip and call for a hearing the next 2 days. And Craig, I know you're an attorney, and, you know, I may be out of line on this, but get up to speed on what is happening. I was surprised the Supreme Court actually rendered a verdict where they had buses moving and they had to flip them around. I mean, that was at least a step forward. But our judicial system has to recognize the threat. And right now, they may recognize the threat, but they're not acting fast enough.
I am sympathetic to that criticism, very. But at the same time, it's a balance, because you swing that pendulum all the way to the other side, and you are avoiding due process. We've got to provide. A lot of people hear the phrase due process, and they wonder what the heck we're talking about. It's giving an individual notice of why they're incarcerated, a warrant, for example, the police or agents are going to try to arrest you in your house. It's an opportunity to talk to a judge before you're shipped off to jail. It's an opportunity to have the government to have to prove their case before you get shipped out of the country, whatever the case may be. It's reasonable notice and opportunity to be heard. The courts are very careful, and the Supreme Court. The current Supreme Court is not filled with some of my favorite people, euphemistically speaking. But at the same time, they have thousands of cases that are brought to writs that are brought before them. Obviously, we think that, you know, these should take priority, but the number of cases that they deal with, they have to pick and choose. They have to deal with other cases. The fact that they did enter that order at 1 o'clock in the morning the other day was significant in terms of Supreme Court history. So that's a glimmer. It's a glimmer of light. Amy, did you have anything else?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think, you know, just opening that door on the due process, and, you know, the adjacency there is right. Like, you warm folks up to rendition and no due process, and then you erode back. Right? Who doesn't get due process, and now who doesn't get it? Right? And you know, we're arguing over facilitate versus effectuate. Right? In terms of bringing Garcia back, and is that what we need to be doing right now? Right? Or do we need the judiciary to, you know, be extraordinarily clear and move more as the Supreme Court did around due process? But I mean, you know, the next thing comes down to what are our protections in the states, you know, and those where are the district courts weak, and where are, you know, the state courts weak, and are we going to make it to the midterms? Mm-hmm.
Let me shift the conversation a little bit. Sharon, you led one of the most successful environmental actions in the Pacific Northwest and sort of overturning Glacier and the Glacier settlement. Maybe talk a little bit about what you learned in terms of resistance and protest and what worked in that. And then how do you apply that experience to where we are today? What do we do? How do we resist? How do we affect the change that we're looking for?
Well, with everything going on, the one thing I would say is in the middle of this quagmire, find your passion. Whether it is due process, whether it is immigration and the abductions and kidnapping, as I call it, whether it is fighting for the free press, find an area. And yes, there may be other times that there is an action taken by this regime where you are going to be calling and protesting, whatever. But it is very important for us to know the area of expertise that we want. And that is what happened on Glacier. Mm-hmm. We actually divided into like five little subgroups, and there was one person in each subgroup initially. And what we did was research. We knew, in this case, who was responsible for what permit, who was the agency, how much sway did the governor have, how much could we actually work with our local electeds. And it was important research. And even though this is fast moving, I would say when you're forming into these small groups and action groups, it's important that you divide up the work as much as you can and then work to keep it up. Because one thing they're very good at is throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks and how many people will move at the new shiny object. Signal gate? We've got another signal gate, but that's long ago. It was probably a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks. Because of the mean tariffs.
Yeah.
And then we have, you know, abductions and kidnappings.
And the Department of Education and higher education and law firms and, you know, yeah.
And I have to say for some of those, like, law firms should be forming a group to fight back, and I'm very disappointed with the ones who settled. I understand that there is money at hand, and there were threats made. But it's like Harvard came out of the dark and said, this is what has happened, and published a copy of the threats that they were given and the extortion. And now other universities forming them. Just as they are forming their cohorts, we need to form our cohorts. And it is beginning to happen. You look at 5 million on, was it April 5th? Mm-hmm. I was on vacation and participated down in California. On April 14th, there were 4 million. We need to continue to grow that. And we need to continue to form hubs also for mutual support. Like on this island, we've got other people like mine. Find your passion.
If I could do a follow-up. I can't remember the call that I was on. There was a debate that happened in the chat on this webinar about where to focus energy. And there's a lot of energy focus right now on Elon Musk and Tesla, right? And that's super visible, right? Makes a ton of sense. The question I had was, is that the extent of the focus? Is that narrow aperture the best strategy? Or does that allow others who are bending the knee, if you will, to hide? And should we be more diverse in our protests, or should it be better to maintain focus in one key area? I don't know if you have a thought, reaction, response to that.
Well, I think the Elon Musk focus is going to fade. I think you haven't really seen him out in public recently, and there's a reason, because he was taking too much of the glory
right.
from the cult leader and the primary dictator. But if that is what motivates people for a period of time, that's positive. And if we can then take that energy and move it to another area, that's fine. Or if that other area grows, that is fine. But the fact that Elon became such a target, I think, helped grow the resistance. Because he is reprehensible both in his personal life and his public life. I mean, so... I do think we need to continue to grow bases on different areas. I think immigration and the mistreatment of people, citizens, no matter where they come from, is an area that is concerning people and growing. And you can only hide your head in the sand so long.
Well, now we have the SAVE Act, which who are we going to be saving? You know, I think I do see a lot of people following their passions and sort of, you know, This is what lit you up, right? Like there will be a time when something will come that will light you up, whether it has already happened or not. And so plugging into that, but I'm, you know, this is the largest scale voter disenfranchisement since Reconstruction, essentially, right? And Jim Crow, so.
And his Republican Congress went right along with it, marched in step. And that's part of the reason it's important to continue to make phone calls and waves. Yeah.
I have a quick question. The old James Carville, you know, it's the economy, stupid, kind of thing. And it's sort of like the economy's starting to tank. And I think it's going to go down a lot more. I think we're going to be in a recession, a possible depression. Is that an avenue for attacking this autocrat?
It's a tough one because he's such a good salesman, and I'm sure it's all Biden's fault. But it is an area that is becoming a major concern, and he made promises and commitments that we need to hold his feet to the fire on.
So I do have another follow-up on protest actions. I'm kind of, in my mind, this balancing act between protest and a rally. And I think of a protest as something against something, and a rally is something for something. And we've heard about protests that have like lost their momentum because they didn't define what they wanted. How important is it for us to start shifting to rallying for what we want as opposed to protesting against the things that we don't want?
That's a good question. I'd say by protesting against what is happening is also rallying for what we want. They're almost together because we do want due process, but we protest against lack of due process. We do want citizens treated fairly and with due process, but we can protest against them. I can't remember in the 14-year-long fight against Lone Star, Glacier, Cal Portland, where we weren't protesting against something, but we always had an end goal of making sure we shut it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, bring them home. Let us vote, right? Like, what is it that you want to dismantle or stop, right, as you're doing it? Is, again, if you haven't been lit up yet, you will be. It's coming for you. And I take your point too, Bruce, about the economy, right? And the purposeful destruction of the economy to keep people hungry and with so many jobs that they don't have time to resist, right? You are so worried and so strapped at a local level, right, that you don't have time to resist.
You know, we have just scratched the surface, Sharon. And you don't have to scratch very far before you... before you start to feel the potential pain. The listeners here and the rest of the island, for that matter, is going to have another opportunity to ask their own questions of you in 2 days. What's coming up, Kevin, in 2 days?
In 2 days, Indivisible Vashon has our member meeting, which is open to anybody who wants to come in the door at the Vashon Methodist Church. The doors open at 6:30. Discussion starts at 7. Sharon will be there. You've heard Sharon talk here. You can ask Sharon questions on Thursday at the Methodist Church, as we have been doing here. So thanks for Sharon for being willing to come and chat with Indivisible Vashon folks. So Methodist Church this Thursday, doors open at 6:30. Program starts at 7. We run for about an hour and a half.
Great. And while you have the floor, Kevin, what's next week?
Speaking also of the Methodist Church, Eric Walker and Pastor Pat Longstroth. Eric has been involved with, of course, we know about the food bank, and we know about Vashon Youth and Family Services, Family Place, but also they're moving forward with creation of a resilience hub, which means that when the weather gets cold or the weather gets hot and you need to find a place that you can actually survive the elements, the resistance hub has that capacity. Now, they're not at that point yet, but they are striving to achieve that. And we'll hear from Pat and Eric how they're doing and how they're trying to move forward in that dimension to address the climate crisis and protect our community all at the same time.
Great, great. Sharon Nelson, thank you for being here. And hopefully we'll be able to call upon you sometime in the future to come back so we can dig a little deeper into some of these subjects. We undoubtedly will have some new things to talk about. It's been enlightening. Hope everybody makes it out to the Indivisible Vashon meeting on Thursday. So therefore, for Kevin, Bruce, Amy, Truman, Sharon Nelson, I'm Craig, and we thank you for listening. Please tune in next Tuesday for the Brown Briefly Show.